Mormon Stories podcast takes a ton of work and depends solely upon listener support. To keep this program alive, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org. Didn't you get picked up, like mentioned in the New York Times or some big newspaper really early on in this process?
Yeah, the New York Times.
What happened?
I think we're about 6 months old. I'm not sure for sure. Maybe a year. And I just got a message in my emails from a New York Times writer. She'd been asked, blogging at that point in time was big news. Like blogging was just emerging, and you know, some of the big blogs that are, you know, kind of really big now had just sort of started and were taking off. And so blogging was sort of in the news, and someone had asked her to write the New York Times had asked her to write a article on religious blogs. And so she decided to write, I don't know about, women and religious blogs. And so, but most of the women she contacted that were, writing religious blogs didn't want to, reveal their true identities. And I was okay with that. I hadn't really been explicit about who I was specifically. And so that was a choice I had to make when she called me. And I'm like, well, would I rather be anonymous or would I rather be in the New York Times? And I had sort of decided that I wasn't going to be anonymous anyway. You know, I was going by my real name. I hadn't put my last name out there, but, I just sort of, you know, decided that I didn't want to hide, I guess, that I was just going to out myself. And if people that I knew ran across the blog, well, then they would have to like it or lump it. And I also was sort of ignorant about sort of the history of feminists being excommunicated. I hadn't read a lot about it. I didn't really know anything about it. So I didn't have as much fear as I might have been had I lived through that.
Or, as much as you should have.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I should have.
I'm kidding. Because, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, and I also knew that there were lines that I wasn't going to cross that would for sure get me into trouble, you know, just because I wouldn't be comfortable crossing them anyway. But, and so I decided to out myself, and I said, sure, I'll go by my full name. And so we did, you know, a long interview, and I got, and she wrote up the article, and it wasn't all about feminist Mormon housewives, but the first three or four paragraphs were all about feminist Mormon housewives. And so then we got a big influx of new readers, and we got picked up by quite a few different newspapers through that year. And some magazines, and they would give little bumps to our numbers, but we grew really fast those first few years, you know, like doubled, at least sometimes tripled readers, you know, every year.
Sure. So, how were you received by the other members of what's now referred to as the Blogger Knuckle? Do you feel like you were warmly received then and now, not so warmly received? Thoughts on that?
I think for the most part, it was a pretty warm reception. Some of the more conservative, you know, more self-proclaimed conservative people were maybe a little less warm, but not unfriendly at all. And for the most part, like all the, you know, kind of big bloggers, big names, early people were really kind to me. And some of the most conservative, tightwad, I don't know, uptight, some of them were so nice. They helped me do a lot of the technical stuff on my blog that I couldn't figure out. And they were really, really generous with just time and ideas and thoughts. And so, yeah, I was really warmly received for the most part. And by all spectrum, you know, across the spectrum, I think, you know, there have been a few posts every once in a while, not at first so much, because I was a lot more hesitant at first, because I didn't know what I was doing, and I didn't want to cross any lines. And also I just, you know, I wasn't as confident a blogger.
Right.
And I wasn't as confident a person in a lot of ways. because I, you know, after a while of doing the blog, I really learned how to have these conversations. Whereas when I first started, I didn't know how to have these conversations in a thoughtful, balanced, measured, you know, I didn't know how to maintain that kind of atmosphere. I didn't know what I was doing at all. And sure. I didn't know. And I wasn't as emotionally distant as I am now because everything was new and everything I was just figuring out for myself. And now I have a certain emotional distance that I can be more logical about things. But at first I was really, you know, like I was every person who insulted me just, oh, it tore me up. And,
right.
You know.
So what are some of the most common topics that you've explored or that have been explored on Feminist Mormon Housewives? Just to give listeners, let's say there are listeners who have never even been to the site. What are the types of things over the years you've tried to explore?
Well, we explore pretty much anything that a feminist or a Mormon or a housewife might be interested in. You know, we do politics. Generally, politics sort of follows the cycle of the election year, you know. Like, we talk about politics a lot right before elections and then sort of goes off for a while. You know, obviously when there was the Proposition 8 in California, we talked about gay rights all the time.
Right.
Like it was constant. And we talk about like just general feminist issues, you know, frequently, you know, like, and we talk about motherhood, we talk about mothering issues, we talk about breastfeeding, we talk about you know, not beating our children, we talk about, you know, like discipline methods, and we talk about primary, and we talk about nursery, and we talk about, you know, anything that might pertain to motherhood, we talk about all the time. And we talk about obviously all of the kind of feminist issues that we have with the church.
Like what? Women. Which ones?
Like you name it, you know, we've had several after, you know. How long have I been doing this? 5 years?
Yeah. Is that right? Five years.
Yeah. So after 5 years, we probably had all of these conversations at least 3 or 4 times, you know, because people that used to read 5 years ago don't read so much anymore, and new people find it all the time and they want to talk about these things that, you know, and so like women in the priesthood,
like whether or not they should have it kind of thing.
Yeah, whether women should have the priesthood, whether women want the priesthood, why they don't have it, why, you know, like all, whatever. And you know, it's usually precipitated by some experience that somebody has. We talk about, you know, Relief Society. We talk about our callings and ask for help with our callings. We talk about, you know, young women's and, you know, the Young Women's Manual and how it makes us crazy. And we talk about, polygamy a lot. We talk about Mother in Heaven all the time. We talk about, you know, temple issues. And that one, we try to be really careful, but some people, it doesn't matter how careful you are, they are upset that you were talking about the temple, especially if you have a problem with the temple, which a lot of Mormon feminists do. We try, you know, we try to be as respectful as we can be, but these are issues that tear people up. And I feel like if we don't talk about them here, I know from my own personal experience, there's really nowhere else unless you're lucky, you know, in your personal acquaintanceships, there's nowhere else
to go.
Yeah. And we talk about, we talk about housewifey stuff too, you know, like what it means to be dependent on men for our income and what it, you know, how much we hate cleaning or like cleaning or hate scrapbooking or love scrapbooking or hate makeup or love makeup or shave our legs or don't shave our legs or wear high heels or don't wear high heels or, you know, everything pretty much.
Sure. So do you feel like you have a decent pulse on either the female experience in the 21st century church or at least the liberal female experience in the 21st century church?
Well, you know, there are times when I think, you know, because so much of my church life, so much of my Mormon self is done online. I mean, I have the church experience every week where I go to church, but that's not really where I talk about the things that matter to me or, you know, delve into the things that are really on my mind. And so even though I have that experience every week, I do sometimes feel like I'm out of touch with the women that don't have any problems, that it just never occurs to be bothered by anything, or that are just, you know, happy. And there are a lot of them. There are a lot of women who are just really not interested in feminist issues, and they're, you know, they don't understand where I'm coming from at all. And there are a lot of moments when I sit back and I think, wow, I've lost my understanding of that. But then having been that person at one time, you know, I feel like I can, if I try, I can tap back into that old me and sort of get into their heads if I need to. But sometimes I forget how really, at least on Sunday, they're probably in the majority. They are in the majority, you know. And I feel like as far as the liberal Mormon experience, yeah, I think I probably am as well versed as anybody in the universe on that.
Right. So define feminist. Let's just say we have listeners who were raised a lot like you and I. It's always been a scary word. You know, they don't know anything about it and scared of it, and maybe even remember feminists being listed as one of the three great enemies along of the church, along with homosexuals and intellectuals. what's a feminist, and what's the feminist? What's the experience of feminism within the church? Let's just say for good and for bad. Like, where is the church good for a feminist, and where is the church sometimes challenging for a feminist? So start from the top with what is a feminist.
Well, I think a feminist can be whatever you want it to be. I understand that there are a lot of women that are really scared of the word, that don't want to claim the word. But this actually brings me back to talking about Ross Peterson and one of the things that he told us. And it was actually, he had gone on his mission to the South and become very interested in African-American issues. And, you know, it was right during the civil rights era. And he came home and from his mission, and he was about to leave the church. And he was actually talking to Frank Church. And Frank Church urged him.
Senator from Idaho, right?
Yeah, Frank Church, Senator from Idaho, actually encouraged him to stay in the church. He says, you know, if everybody who thinks like you leaves the church, if everybody who believes in civil rights leaves the church, then the church will never change.
Right.
And I think that, you know, that the same thing applies to feminists. You know, if everybody who, you know, doesn't necessarily believe in the party line of, or whatever they think the party line of feminism is, if they all won't claim the word, then, you know, feminism is whatever those more extreme ideas are, you know. But if you, you know, if you believe in equality for women, then anybody can claim the word feminist. And I hope that more women will, because I think there are so many issues that, you know, apply to especially mothers and the inequality that mothers face. And that's my new passion right now, is what I want to call motherhood feminism, because I'm just so, you know, when I got married, even though I wouldn't have claimed the word feminist, I really thought that we would be equal partners. And we were. We really were. I mean, he did as much of the housework as I did. And, you know, we both worked and we both made money, and we, you know, and there was just a lot of real equality between us. But as soon as I had a baby, I was just shocked at how my world changed and how there was no equality anymore. And it wasn't really my husband's fault, but I was just blown away by how much of that burden fell on me. You know, like, there goes my Social Security. There goes my pension. There goes my, you know, my self-reliance. There goes my my ability to get out of the house and enjoy adult conversation. There goes all the freedom I had to make choices of what I wanted to do with my life. There goes all of the chances I have to do something fun because I have to spend all my time cleaning up vomit and poop and wiping doorknobs, you know, and it just consumed my life. And I realized this is not fair, you know, like there is no equality for mothers. They're just, you know, you can be a father and still, you know, have a lot of work family balance that is equal to, you know, someone that doesn't have children, but you cannot do that as a mother. There's just no options out there for mothers.
Right.
You know, and that just, and that really shocked me. And I think even this next generation is more shocked because they've been told their whole lives that they're equal, you know, and they think they are. And when they're single, really single women have every opportunity that single men have. And so, you know, up through all their schooling, up through having their first exciting jobs, women are equal up until they hit motherhood. And then boom, that equality is gone. It is gone, gone, gone. And so, you know, motherhood feminism is where my passion is right now. But I think you can define feminism however you want, just so long as you accept that you are one. No, you don't have to. But I wish more women would become comfortable with it.
And men, there are men who call themselves feminists too, right?
Absolutely. And men too. I love it when men call themselves feminists because feminist men are way sexy. No. But, So, feminism in the church. Okay. Well, I think on a lot of practical levels, feminism in the church is really difficult because you have a lot of dissonance. If you call yourself a feminist in the church, you're still under the authority of men all the time. You know, it's patriarchy. And so there is no practical equality. There is no, you know, you never get to be in charge. You never get to lead. You never, you know, and a lot of men never get to either. But as a woman, you don't even have the possibility of ever leading. You know, that's it, you know. And there's also just a lot of old-fashioned ingrained sexism that is either subtle or not so subtle where, you know, women aren't supposed to be in the church without a priesthood holder because, you know, what if there was a fire? Or, you know, like we couldn't put out a fire or we couldn't call 911 or, you know, like a lot of little or, you know, calling my husband to ask if it's okay if I have a calling before they ask me, which actually makes my husband really upset, like genuinely angry.
Do they not do the opposite?
No, they don't. Right. Not in my ward, but right. Yeah, he gets mad. Like when they call to ask him, he'll be like, why don't you ask her? And then he'll stew for hours, which I think is cute because men are sexy. And so, you know, on a lot of practical levels, and then also, you know, the issue of, not, you know, and some of the historical issues like polygamy and the idea of polygamy in heaven. You know, obviously incredibly unequal and disturbing to a lot of women, even women who don't consider themselves feminists. And also the inability to pray or talk about our mother and pray to or talk about our mother in heaven or even theorize or question or, you know, wonder. We're basically told not to think about it. And that is really disturbing to a lot of women who, find themselves calling themselves feminists. But on the other hand, where I think Mormonism is really good for feminists is that a lot of our doctrine, you know, if you look at it from the right angle, is really feminist doctrine. You know, the fact that we have a mother in heaven. Now, we're not allowed to talk to her, but who else has a mother in heaven? You know, no one. Well, right. You know, I guess the Wiccans probably have something like that. But, you know, it's very... it's very feminist in a way. than there is, you know, the way that Mormons tend to view the story of Eve, completely different, turning it on its ear, where Eve made a noble choice in order to, you know, give everybody bodies and allow us to be, you know, to know good from evil, and that that was a good thing, and that she made a, you know, a good choice, and that, you know, so that is obviously not a very standard Christian sort of view about that story. And then, you know, our view of the eternities of, you know, that depending on how you choose to view the polygamy issue, and I tend to just sort of put it in the back of my mind because I have no idea, but, you know, depending on how you choose to view, our view of the afterlife, we have, you know, two people who get to progress for eternity together as equals, you know, priests and priestesses and gods and goddesses. And, you know, that's a really kind of feminist ideal.
Sure.
So, I really, really like the the Mormon view of afterlife way better than I like, you know, standard Christian views of the afterlife.
Right.
Totally Mormon that way. You know, so, and also for being a feminist in the church, you know, this is a hard one to say because there have been a lot of women who've had really bad experiences with patriarchy where they've, you know, been abused or, you know, treated really poorly by men in positions of power. And that is a very real problem. But there are also a lot of women who have had really good experiences. I mean, for the most part, this, what do they call it? Kind of chicken patriarchy. It works pretty well. Men, in my experience in the church, tend to try really hard to, make things as equal as they can. And they tend to not lord their power over their wives or their families or, you know, the people in their stewardships. I just, the ones who are doing it right, the ones who truly, you know, who are truly trying to live as righteously as they can, tend to, you know, be pretty fair. And I don't know, at least in my experience.
Sure, sure.
So, you know, if you don't look at the structure of it, the results aren't too bad.
Right.
So, you know, that's kind of the positives and negatives of being a feminist in the church, I guess. Did that cover it pretty well?
Sure. So are there any of, like, this is always one of the most sensitive questions to ask because I guess aside from being public about your views and speaking candidly about things that make people uncomfortable, maybe the only thing worse than being open and candid is sometimes acting or speaking out in a way that's viewed as either critical or even suggesting how you might want the church to act or change. Do you have aspirations, or are you feeling comfortable even able to vocalize any aspirations for change? Like, would you like to see the women get the priesthood? Would you like to be able to pray to Mother in Heaven or have people be okay with praying to Mother in Heaven? Would you like to see Section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants, you know, renounced? Like, or, you know, again, if you're not comfortable, that's cool too. I just thought I'd ask in case there are things you're comfortable talking about.
Geez, why don't you put me on the spot, John? Well, you know, I think one of the advantages of having grown up in the church from the time I was little is I'm fairly comfortable with not being in control. You know what I mean? Like, I've never had the illusion in my life that I would ever be able to change the church. Right. You know, never. It's never crossed my mind that that would be a possibility. And I think that that was just because I've been born and bred as, you know, someone who will submit to patriarchy. And that may be a good or bad thing. I don't know, but it's, you know, it's just how I am, I guess. And so I've never, I've never felt like that was a possibility for me, you know. As far as what I would like to see, I'm never really sure. That's one of the things about the way that my faith works for me is that, you know, I have some really big things that I have faith in. You know, the really basic parts of the gospel that I believe in. And for most of the other stuff, I think it's all kind of speculation and, you know, like just the way that tradition and I don't have a lot of, I guess, I don't have a lot of faith in the structure of the church. And I don't have a lot of faith in some of the peripheral issues. And so, you know, things like Mother in Heaven and priesthood, and I know that this is sort of a standard answer that's not very satisfactory for a lot of people. I feel like it'll just work out. I don't have any faith that it is the way it's supposed to be. I have zero faith that this is the way it's supposed to be. But I also am not terribly worried about it.
Right.
Like if it changes, that would be great. I would love it. I don't know exactly how that it would change or what changes would look like, but I just know that I don't like the way a lot of those things are handled now. But I'm not much of a doctrinal wonk either. So I'm like, I just don't, you know, the nitty gritty of how that would change our doctrine or how those changes would take effect. It's just, you know, not one of those things that I'm passionate about figuring out.
Sure. Sure. What about the mother's experience in the church? I imagine that you're most attuned to a woman in the United States, but you know, you hear things about Mormon women being depressed or high use of antidepressants within the church. And you're probably plugged into what it's like to try and be a Mormon woman in the 21st century, you know, more than most. Do you have, you know, are there trends you see in terms of things that are not working well or causing a lot of pain and suffering? You know, what are the things, you know, let's say mothers are on the battle lines, Mormon mothers on the battle lines. What are the things that Mormon mothers are struggling with? And what are the things you think we might be able to do to help them and support them better?
One of the big things I really think needs to happen is that we need to, both for Mormon mothers and for women who never become mothers, because dude, talk about it being hard to be a Mormon woman. Being not a mother as a Mormon woman, I would say.
It's harder.
Well, I don't know if it's harder, but it's its own brand of really hard.
Right.
You know, everybody has lots of different kinds of hard, I guess. But I guess I think we need to change focus. I mean, I really like the emphasis on family, and I think that we need to change the focus though from mothers to parents and being involved with their children and nurturing them and being, you know, like making it so that men feel like that they need to be just as invested in their children's lives and welfare and upkeep as the women are. And I also think that we need to change a lot of the focus from mothering being what's going to fulfill us, because a lot of women don't feel fulfilled through motherhood. They just find it. I mean, there's a lot of fulfilling things about it, but it's also really taxing and really hard and really boring at times. And I don't know. So I think we need to change the focus from being fulfilled by motherhood or being made righteous through motherhood or, you know, to being fulfilled by becoming personally your best, you know, through your own spiritual growth, through making yourself into the best person you can be, through, you know, your own education and your own, you're not just here to make your kids be better people. You're here to make yourself a better person. And I feel like we don't get that message a lot at church. You know, we get the message that, oh, you're here for your children.
And your spouse.
And your spouse. No, we're not. We're here for our own spiritual growth. And I feel like that focus needs to change, you know, for all of our messages, that motherhood is a great way to get spiritual growth because it will tax you, but it isn't what will save you. And I don't know that Mormon, like the idea that Mormon women are more depressed than other. I think that if you were to, you know, like measure equivalent depressiveness over women that have equivalent lives, like women who are stay-at-home moms with kids of a certain age, that I think that probably Mormon women are about on par with most other women. It's just that we tend to be in more difficult situations because of the choices that we make because of church. Other women make those same choices sometimes, but you know, we tend to have maybe quit school before we should have, or not have as many options, or stay in bad marriages, or accept things from our husbands that we might not accept had we, you know, had a different view of the way marriage should be, or, you know, like, I don't think it's necessarily being Mormon that makes mothers struggle.
Sure.
I think just being a mother, a stay-at-home mom, it's just a really emotionally difficult thing to do for a lot of women. And I think that there are a lot of women who probably shouldn't make the choice to do that.
It's not for everyone.
No, it's really not for everybody.
And you don't mean that in a patronizing way, right?
I don't know. I don't know. Can I be patronizing about something I did myself? I feel like I survived it, but I feel like I might have been a better person, a better mother. I might be a better person now if I would have held on to more of me during that time period. I was really lucky to have the blog. I feel like it saved me from complete insanity.
How's that?
Well, I had a job, kind of. I mean, I wasn't getting paid, but I had some place where I could go and I could do something that made me feel important, that I got, that I got recognized for. You know, it's a nice little emotional high to get written up in the New York Times, or, you know, to have your face on the cover of a magazine, even if it is just Sunstone.
Right. Yeah. I remember that one.
Yeah. But, you know, and to have people tell you what you do is wonderful, or, you know, to have thousands of people read it every day. There's a certain mindset within Mormon culture that says, well, you should just do it because, you know, it's the right thing to do. You shouldn't expect anything for all this work you do. You shouldn't expect anybody to appreciate it. You know, this is about sacrifice. But the problem is that nobody really thrives under those circumstances. People need to be validated. People need to be told that they're doing good work. People need little awards sometimes, or to be told that, you know, what they do is, I mean, not just be told what they do is important, but really know that what they do is important. We get told what we do is important all the time, but it does feel patronizing, quite honestly,
right?
Because people don't really mean it. I mean, if they meant it, then they would, then the circumstances of motherhood would be entirely different.
Would change.
Yes. Then motherhood wouldn't automatically equal a complete lack of equality in society, but that's what it equals. And so people don't really mean it when they say that what you do is important, because when people really believe that something is important, well, then, you know, time and money and effort is put into making it, you know, worth the time and effort. But people know that, you know, mothers are going to sacrifice, and so why should we support them?
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. So I'm completely lost. I have no idea what we're talking about.
Let me ask you this: have you ever been in trouble for what's been written on feminist Mormon housewives? Have ecclesiastical leaders ever approached you, or you ever been turned in, or you know, people have written in saying you're damaging people's faith, or you're hurting testimonies, or you're causing people to leave the church, anything like that?
I have never been approached by my bishops or, you know, any of my leaders. I sort of have this don't ask, don't tell policy about my blog. I know that there are people in my ward that know about it. I told one of my friends about it. And, you know, at the time, she told my Relief Society president. She's not my Relief Society president anymore. So I know that she knew. I don't think she ever told the bishop, or at least if she did, the bishop never said anything to me. I know that there are people in my ward who know that it's me and that who read it, because I get comments from them sometimes, or sometimes even people will ask me questions like, you know, like, oh, I was reading Mormon Enigma and, you know, help me. So, you know, I get stuff like that every once in a while, but, you know, my home teachers have brought it up to me before. So I know that there are people that know, but I don't know who knows, and but they never bring it up to me. So, as far as,
isn't that crazy that you can have a blog that's been read by 20, 30, 40,000 people, and a lot of people in your own neighborhood, your own ward don't even know?
Yeah, it is kind of funny. But you know, it's kind of like there are certain kind of people who seek after, you know, some place to talk about those things, and then there's some people that just, it's like my husband, he, you know, he's very feminist in his actions, you know, he would never look for a blog called Feminist Mormon Housewives. He would never find it. He would never read it. He just wouldn't be interested. Right. It's just not something, if it wasn't my blog, and he never reads it, and it is my blog.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It's just not something that is on his radar. He has no interest in it at all.
Yeah.
And he loves me, but you know, all this crazy stuff going on in my head is completely, I don't know. But I don't have any idea what's going on inside of the car, and he can fix it. So, you know, but as far as, yeah, I do get, I do get emails, and there are comments on a very regular basis from people saying, how dare you, you know, you're hurting the church. How dare you talk about this in public? This is better left in private, or you're, you know, speaking ill of the Lord's anointed, or you're, you know, just all of the things that, all of the excuses that people give for not, you know, expressing your difficulties. And they're pretty standard. And sometimes I respond and sometimes I don't, just depending on the tone. You know, if it's somebody that I feel like I can maybe reach in some way, I will often, you know, just try and write back in a very calm, measured way and say, you know, this may not be for you, but there are a lot of people who are really helped by having some place to talk about these things. And, you know, I get emails all the time from people who also say, you know, FMH saved my testimony, you know, like, I was about to leave the church. I couldn't handle it anymore. I had no one to talk to about these things. The kids are getting really loud back there. Can you hear them?
Don't worry about it. That's perfect for this episode.
But so, you know, I get both ends. I get the call. And often if I tell people who are really upset, you know, that we dare have these conversations, and sometimes it's a subject, you know, like there are some people that are just not comfortable talking about sex. And so they say these things should be private, you know. And then there are some people that just are upset about talking about the temple, even when we try not to, you know, talk about things that are specifically not supposed to be talked about. Or there are people that are just really upset that the whole blog even exists. But often those people can be reasoned with if you explain, you know what, there are a lot of people who struggle, and, you know, our blog has helped strengthen a lot of people in the church, and it's helped some people perhaps leave the church without some of the bitterness that they might have had without, you know, the blog, or it's helped explain the church to people who otherwise wouldn't have been interested in learning anything about the church at all, you know. So it provides a lot of things that, you know, not having the blog around, there would be a hole. And I also think just one of the things I feel on my, for my own benefit, is that I really feel like if the blogs, if Feminist Mormon Housewives and some of the other Mormon blogs were not on the Bloggernacle, well, then most, you know, if you Google subjects that bother you about the Mormon Church, you're going to get, you know, either anti-Mormon sites that really, people that are really bitter and absolutely hate the church and will say all kinds of things that are either not true or only half true, or, you know, just really unbalanced and a lot of seething anger underneath. And that would be the only other alternative to the church website if the blogs weren't there. And, you know, and in the choice between those two things, someone who's curious about, you know, well, is this piece of church history true? They're probably going to rely on the anti-Mormon sites more than the official church website, because, you know, I don't know, because they're more exciting, you know.
Or maybe the church has lost some credibility with them because they feel betrayed, right, or misled by what they read, right, in seminary or institute or whatever.
Right. And so, you know, they hear something about Joseph Smith and polygamy, or Joseph Smith and his dead, or they, you know, and if there's only the choice between the extreme ex-Mormons and the church website, you know, I don't think that's going to be a healthy thing for the church. And so, you know, the blogs provide kind of this middle ground where people can go and get some of the straight answers that they want, without a lot of the vitriol that you get in some of the anti-Mormon sites.
So what about the people who would say, here's two questions. One is, whatever good you think you might do, the fact that you have probably introduced some people to knowledge or feelings that ultimately led them out, that whatever good you think you might do could never be compensated for the few people who you might have let out. Let's start there, and then I'll ask the second question. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know. It could be true. I don't know. But, you know, I sort of feel like if there's someone who is going to be let out of the church by something they read on FMH, then they're going to be let out of the church by something somewhere, because, you know, it's a big wide world and it's a big wide internet. And, you know, if one little thing is going to lead you away from the church, then it's not really my fault. You know, like, it's, that's something that's going to happen anyway, because that's the kind of testimony you have. But also, I think, I don't know, I was just reading Rough Stone Rolling, Bushman's biography of Joseph Smith, and I've been finding it actually a really uplifting experience. I know that if I would have read it when I was a teenager, I would have been traumatized, but I think it's so interesting that now I find it really actually spiritually affirming. But I was reading, there's a chapter in there about exaltation and the beliefs that Joseph Smith taught about exaltation, and how important knowledge was in his kind of metaphysical explanations of the universe. And, you know, he didn't talk about spirit, or, you know, he talked about knowledge being, you know, kind of the forming aspect of human beings. And so, you know, the idea that knowledge, you know, as long as I'm representing things truthfully and fairly, the idea that knowledge is in and of itself bad, I think is anathema to what we believe about knowledge being, you know, kind of the basic, important, fundamental part of what makes human beings human. And so, you know, I just think that knowledge is a good thing. And sometimes it is hard to, you know, sometimes the knowledge gives you sort of this dissonance that it's hard to balance with your faith. But knowledge in and of itself, I think, has to be seen as a good thing.
Along those lines, what about the people who would say, look, if the brethren wanted this stuff talked about, they would bring it up. They would talk about General Conference. They would write lesson manuals. And so who are you to say that people need to have these conversations? Isn't that the brethren's to decide? And until the brethren decide that we need to have these conversations, you need to just follow their lead and not become a self-anointed purveyor of open conversations. What would you say to that?
Well, that's a hard one. I guess I would just, that's not really the gospel I believe in, I guess. We are told specifically that it's not meat that we are commanded in all things. You know, they give us an outline. We're given some basic principles, and you know, we need to figure out our own way. And all I know is what I needed. And I needed to have these conversations. I know I could not have stayed in the church without having these conversations. Either I would have had to figured out a way to have it with friends who I personally knew, or, you know, but I would have had to have these conversations with someone who understood and wasn't just someone who was going to say, well, you need to pray and read the scriptures, because that was not working for me. And I was, you know, I was really reaching a point where I was going to break. And I know that people break all the time. So I don't know, you know, if you really think that the brethren have to tell you exactly what to do with every moment of your life, and you can only learn the things that the brethren tell you specifically to learn, then I think that you just have an entirely different understanding of the gospel than I do.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at mormonstories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at claytonpixton.com or skypixton.com. That's Sky with an E, S-K-Y-E, pixton.com. Thank you.
Bright with thy praise.